first I was like, oh, there's nothing here that like I can, that I think I might want to try to have. But the thing that kept, so I thought, well, look for patterns, what do you see? And the thing that kept coming up in the party were accusations that the women were prostitutes. We all know that there's a long history of trying to discredit women by saying that they were not chaste or whatnot. And I thought, well, what is this doing in the context of the Civil War? Like, that these women are being called prostitutes. Does it matter that it's happening in the Civil War? And then one of the petitions, a lawyer wrote a long sort of rant about this one particular case, and he basically said, you know, even if this man, let's say he did, assault her or rape her, she's a known prostitute, and we know that the laws, the rape laws, were written to protect chaste women, and this woman is not chaste, or and so it can't be rape. And I thought, wow. And then it made me think about Butler, who I've written about, and his women's organizations, and how he had said, we're going to treat Southern white women as if they're women filing an application on the street. And everybody knew what that meant, right? It was just shorthand for, that they would not be protected, that they were inviting insult, right? And most of the scholars, including myself, have mostly been interested in the implications for elite Southern white women in Louisiana. And I thought, well, what happens if we turn our eyes to, what does this mean for actually for prostitutes? Like, what is he saying about how prostitutes are being treated in New Orleans in the context of Civil War? Right, that there's this kind of unspoken connection between insult, assault, and prostitution. And so then I thought, okay, well, maybe there's something here, like thinking about the link between rape and prostitution, and particularly because most scholars have argued that the Civil War is a low-rate war, but that prostitution spikes. It's like this moment in American history where the sex trade just is off the chain historically. And so I thought, well, what's the connection between those two? So then my next search was prostitution and that just really kind of blew my mind, to be honest, in the sense that what I found when I looked up rape felt familiar and like something, okay, I know this, like I'm not going to be able to say anything new. But when I looked up prostitutes, what was really amazing was that I had women's voices in a sense. Most of them are illiterate, so it's the woman's sign marked by X. In some cases, it seems some of the women wrote their own petitions, but it seems like the overwhelming majority where somebody was writing for the women, but really trying to capture their voices, and says, she says, and she says, and she says. So for me, it was like, oh my God, I have these women's voices in some form. And that's just something that you don't usually hear, like women who are prostitutes talking about their lives or their interactions with police officers or men. So then, after that, I was trying to just kind of figure out what's the history of prostitution in Kentucky. It was one of those things where I kept going into these rabbit holes. But I'm okay, now I need to figure out about prostitution and Civil War. Read that book. And I just kept going into holes. And then I sort of thought, okay, Crystal, you've got to rein yourself in. You're in the middle of the semester. You're never going to write this paper. I decided, okay, one of the women came up three times. She had three petitions. She petitioned all three Civil War governors. And her fines went from $50 to $100 to $800. And it was clear that she was kind of notorious. And so I thought, well, what can I find about? Maybe I can find something about her in the census. So, at first, it took me a while to make a connection that she was using an alias. And then in one of her petitions, the last petition, she claims that she's not the person, the alias name, Julia Dean. She said, I'm not. They turned me under some name that I've never heard of. And my name is Clorinda Rasour. And I was like, and so I had her in that status, this woman's name appeared. And then I was like, but in her second petition, she named her sons who are serving in the military as with that last name of the person that she's saying she is in the third. So her sons are, you know, David and Sam and I forget the other one's name, Missouri. And I'm like, but I think she's singing, okay, it's a different governor. So they're not gonna make a connection, right? And so then I had her real name, right? And so I went into the census and tried to kind of track her. Was able to find her marriage license, who she married, where she was from, when the family moved and where they moved to. All of her children and was able to track them. And then she appeared in the military records as well as under, and the military records identified her as Clorinda Rasour, alias Julia Dean, right? And so I was able to kind of confirm that she was actually this person in all three of these things. And then I thought, okay, and I don't write about, she gets arrested by the military authorities as well. And two of her sons do too, but I can't quite figure out. I think it's with counterfeiting, but I'm not quite sure. And she gets sent to prison in Missouri, a women's prison in Missouri. And I haven't been able, and it's in the 1 year that she doesn't get fined. So she gets fined in 62, 63, 64. She's in Missouri for a little bit, at least in this prison. But she comes back and she gets fined in 65, right? So I try to track her and try to tell her story. In some ways, when I first started going in this rabbit hole about her, I thought, she's gonna screw me up because she's not typical. She's not typical in that she's written three petitions. She's not typical because she's a map of sorts, right? But then I sort of calmed myself down a little bit. Hers was the most, of all of my petitions, hers was the most kind of aggressive about soldiers and what soldiers were doing in the city and making a connection between sexual assault and prostitutions, because she was basically saying they invade our spaces, we can't control them, and it's no wonder that our houses have become disorderly houses because we can't restrain the soldiers. And here are these men who have not been, they're not good officers. The officers let them run the city. And so she, when I went through of all the prostitution petitions, hers was the like strongest. And I'm like, oh, she's a con artist or a sociopath or something like that. I started digging in deeper. But then what I found is when I went through all three of her petitions were that the themes that appear in her petitions are themes that actually appear in all the prostitutes' petitions, right? So in terms of how they frame soldiers, that I had the most sort of continuity between women talking about not being able to control and restrain soldiers in their private spaces, right? And she does that beautifully in her first petition. Her second petition, she's using the fact that she says she's a widow. I found out she's not a widow. Her husband leaves her somehow in the 50s when she moves into prostitution with eight kids. She's a single mother. But she basically lies and says she's a widow. Her husband dies in 68. So, and I'm able to track him as well. So, she says she's a widow and she's a mother. But her main argument is that her sons are serving, just three sons serving in the army. And you would not send a mother of Union soldiers to the workhouse, would you now? She says to the governor. And then in her third letter, she blames in some ways she blames the police officers and says that basically they come after her because she won't let them have their way in her respect, in her. And you see these arguments being made, and that she's too poor to pay $800 fine. And so that you see all of these arguments being made at some level in all of the prostitution's petitions. And almost all from what, and I have two women of color, and one woman of color makes the argument that it's soldiers and it's black soldiers invading her space and she can't control them. And ultimately, almost all the fines are remitted. And in the case, by 1865, many women are being fined and they're high fines, $400, $500, $800. In those cases, they mostly reduce the fines to $100 or $50. They have to pay something. But you can see that there's a backlash around sort of police and prostitutes. That's the main thing that we have. So at the end of the day, I had more questions than answers. I was able to kind of track patterns in these petitions. I wanted to do stuff with the pardons, but I just wasn't able to get back to them to kind of figure out how do I make this connection. And I was 15 pages in and I hadn't dealt with all of my sources. As you can see by the end of something, here are the quotes. So I have some questions and things that I do want to kind of recommend when I go back. And the questions are, what can these petitions tell us about prostitution and the Civil War? Again, it goes back to, I don't really know a lot about before the war. I'm getting a sense of what's going to happen after the war with prostitution. What can they tell us about rape and the Civil War, if anything? Does prostitution change in the context of the war? And this is something that I think is one of the more interesting things for me to track, right? And ultimately, what kinds of claims and arguments about, womanhood are these prostitutes making in their petitions, that as mothers, as widows, and in the context of war, that they're deserving of some kind of protection, and that they see themselves as worthy and not disreputable. And I think that there may be something that's changing in this moment, where Butler's trying to blur the line between respectable women and prostitutes to elite white women's disadvantage. I think that prostitutes are trying to blur the line between respectable women and prostitutes to their advantage, right? So those are some of the things.